Mazzara and Parra project to Alimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or no.
Jung Ho Kang, two home runs, should you pick him up? Kendrys Morales, two home runs, should you pick him up? Anthony Rizzo, two home runs. Yeah, you probably already picked him up. Welcome to the show, Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, September 7th. Ooh, a lot of multi-home run games yesterday, Scott White.
Yeah, there were, from a lot of players who needed multi-homer games to kind of reverse the trend they were on.
Hey, you have a Braves shirt on. I have
a
Yankee shirt on. How weird is that?
What?
I never wear Yankee shirts.
I often wear Brave shirts.
To work?
Yeah. Why not? Okay.
Well, I guess it's not that coincidental then. I'm Adam Azer. That's Scott White. This is Fantasy Baseball Today. Pretty interesting day on Tuesday. A lot of pitchers to talk about. Should you pick up Tyler Anderson if he's available? Matt Boyd. Clay Buchholz has been really good in his last three starts and could be in line for two starts next week if things break right. Willie Peralta, you know, did a pretty nice job against the Cubs. Wasn't great, but he's got two starts next week. Giancarlo Stanton is back. And let's dive into it. But first, our stat of the day is just kind of interesting. Anthony Rizzo hit two home runs yesterday, as I mentioned. That's as many home runs as Rizzo hit since July 22nd.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It is. It is crazy how much of a home run drought he was in. For what it's worth, during that gap, which was a 42-game, it was a 42-game stretch where he had just two home runs.
Ugh.
He still hit .292. All his other numbers still looked fine. He was just Jose Abreuing it, not hitting home runs to go along with everything else.
Yeah.
And now, hopefully this is him reversing course. He has 28 home runs on the season, so it's not like it's really hurt his overall line.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And now Abreu certainly coming out of that funk. He's homering all the time.
Yes, he is. That corrected itself, as we kind of thought it would.
Yeah, but with Rizzo, I wonder how many of his owners missed the playoffs. You know, for example, in our podcast categories league, the Rejects League, I had Anthony Rizzo. Seven teams made the playoffs. I think I finished eighth. I just missed it. And it was an OBP league, and he was absolutely great in that. But I don't know. There was a lot of production there that I was missing. You need home runs. You need RBIs. I don't know if the RBIs were there. I can't imagine they were as good as they could have been with only two home runs and, what would you say, 42 games?
Yes.
I feel like Anthony Rizzo kind of let me down. Not going to lie.
In a categories league, yeah, that's probably true. No, in a points league, as I said, he was doing enough other things that he was still putting up must-start numbers. But if you depended on him to help you in home runs, there were several weeks there where he didn't, and that could have really dragged you down. I don't know what you can do about it. I don't know what you can take from it.
No, nothing. It's just going to be like at the end of the year, if his power numbers, if he's closer to 40 home runs, it's going to look maybe a lot better than some of his owners actually got, because if they missed the playoffs, you're going to, like Jose Abreu, if you missed the playoffs, you might have missed a lot of his production.
But even looking at next year, I mean,
nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's not like you can really anticipate this. It's not something, you know, this just happens sometimes.
Yep.
Players have power droughts.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to go ahead and look up where he ranked among first basemen from July 22nd until yesterday, and we'll see just how good he was. But I've got some hitters and pitchers I want to know if you're ready to add them. They are available in a lot of leagues. These three hitters are owned between 50 and 57% of leagues. Randall Grichuk, he now has, he homered yesterday, so yeah, before that, in the 22 games before yesterday, he was slugging .735. It's 23 games since being recalled. Grichuk has 10 home runs. Kendrys Morales has 5 home runs and a double in his last 9 games and a .368 batting average. This is not his first hot streak. If you remember with Kendrys Morales, he had a 10-game stretch late June to early July with a .526 batting average and 7 homers, and he was brutal after that. And then Jung Ho Kang homered 3 times in 6 games before going on the DL in August. Now he's back. He hits 2 home runs against St. Louis. Was not his first game off the DL. But all right, we got Grichuk, Morales, and Jung Ho Gong. Putting positions aside, who would be most interesting to you?
Well, Gong would, even with positions aside, because if you project his numbers this year over 550 at bats, which is, you know, about what you'd expect for an everyday player, he's on a 37 homer pace. But of course, he's not going to get 550 at bats. He wasn't going to even before going on the DL, because there have only been four times this season where the Pirates have started Gong four games in a row. So they've never really upped his playing time in the way we hoped they would, him coming off that bad leg injury last year that was still affecting him in April, of course. So I don't know why that would change after this DL stint. I think there's still going to be playing time concerns. I think it kind of puts him in the same category with Moncada and Puig, like we were talking about yesterday. I mean, it's one thing stashing a guy because you know he has upside and you expect the at-bats will follow, but this late in the year, it needs to follow pretty soon, and I don't know that you can count on that.
What about Morales and Grichuk?
Morales I see as a hot hand play. Like you said, we've seen him get hot before, and I don't expect... I don't think he's turned over a new leaf as a player or anything. Grichuk is fine if you need home runs in a roto league, but that's as far as I'm willing to go with it. You said he had 10 home runs in the 23 games since returning. He also has two walks to 30 strikeouts, so he's not a points league guy.
Yeah, okay, totally. Our pitchers that we're looking to add, perhaps. Really nice performances from some fairly unexpected places. Tyler Anderson, although I don't know how unexpected it was. He only struck out two Giants, but gave up two runs in 7 1/3, and Tyler Anderson has made 16 starts this year. He has allowed more than three earned runs three times in 16 starts. He's just been very solid. And next week he will have Arizona on the road. And I feel like he should be a two-star pitcher. Arizona and San Diego, if he's a two-star guy. Right now we don't have him listed as such, but Anderson's lined up to pitch Monday.
Yeah, that's not unusual to not have that second start slotted yet this early in the previous week, which is kind of annoying, I know, if you go to the two-star pitchers page. But I think Tyler Anderson, you know, if it's not two starts next week, it'll be two starts the week after. And you probably want him. I know I kind of poo-pooed his success at home, and I'm still really nervous about it. But kind of that, I think there's a certain level of pitchability here that can't really be quantified. The way yesterday's start unfolded, being in the thin air of Coors Field, he noticed his changeup, which is his best swing and miss pitch, didn't have its usual movement on it. And instead of sticking with it and just taking his lumps, he abandoned his changeup. He threw it a little more than half as often as usual for the game as a whole. And it led to fewer strikeouts. He only had two of them, but also just two earned runs in seven innings at Coors Field. So that might explain why he's had so much success there. Just he's has good judgment of that sort of thing, is adaptable, and maybe is relatively safe because of that. I think the jury's still out, but with the two-star week coming up, I think it's time to invest in that.
Yeah, well, for Anderson, if it is a two-star week, it's at Arizona and home against San Diego. So if you're going to be home, you may as well be home against San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right.
Might not need the changeup to strike them out.
That's San Diego. I mean, that's Tyler Anderson. Matt Boyd also pitched very well at the White Sox. He's got two starts next week. Minnesota.
Yes, he does.
What's
yes,
that?
He does. Definitely need to pick him up for the two starts. And unlike last week, remember when he faked us out with what was supposed to be a two-star week but got pushed back, his one start was only four innings long. Boyd's second start right now would be on a Saturday, so it could still get pushed back a day and he'll make two starts.
Okay, good. That's Minnesota at home and at Cleveland. Luis Sessa, probably the least exciting of the three, Anderson, Boyd, and Sessa, right?
Yeah, although he might, is he the most owned of the three?
No, Anderson, then Sessa, then Boyd.
Yeah, Sessa needs to be the least owned by a good margin.
All right, so he's got another start coming up this weekend against Tampa Bay. Sessa will be a one-start guy next week, but he did fine against Toronto. Did give up another home run, though, 5 1/3 innings, two runs. Now, who would you rather have, Anderson or Boyd? Let's start with that.
Boyd.
Okay. And then how about let's throw Clay Buchholz into the mix here. His last three starts, Buchholz has pitched between 6 6 2/3. He's given up one earned run in each start, two walks, 18 strikeouts in about 19 innings, and only one home run allowed. Those three starts were at Detroit, at Tampa Bay, and at San Diego. You notice some commonality there, Scott, in those three starts?
What were they against?
They were all on the road.
All on the road. Okay.
Buchholz, 5.83 ERA at home, 3.88 ERA on the road. I don't know how coincidental that is. I mean, his last three starts, he's been very good. They've all been on the road. Who's to say they wouldn't have been good at home? But Buchholz, you know, if Stephen Wright cannot return to the rotation, he could have two starts next week. They would both be at home against the Orioles and the Yankees.
Yeah. I'm going to stay away from him.
Okay. Okay. Well, he's 20% or 21% owned.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get maybe you could do worse, but Dylan G., two starts next week, Oakland and the White Sox. Ricky Nolasco, Seattle and Toronto next week. Miguel Gonzalez, who is kind of a quality start machine and just came off the DL and threw another one against Detroit, 6 1/3 scoreless innings. He's got Cleveland and at Kansas City next week. Well, he could have
the Cleveland.
Definitely Cleveland, maybe two starts.
I just like that you put the article in front of it, the Cleveland.
Did I say the Cleveland?
Must have been thinking about the Clevelander here in Miami.
Willie Peralta, 7% owned. Another game with 10 swinging strikes, the fourth time in six starts. He also had 18 swinging strikes in his previous start. At Cincinnati and at the Cubs, so not the best matchups there. Then you got like Zach Neale and Adam Morgan, who are really barely owned at all. Did anybody stand out to you last night? Gene, Alasco, Miguel Gonzalez, Peralta, making you think positively here?
Well, you kind of referred to Gonzalez as a quality start machine. This was his first start back from a groin strain. But combining it with the eight starts before that DL stint, he has a 2.83 ERA. Not a big bat misser, not exciting at all, really. But we've seen him be this streamable two-start option guy kind of early in his career with the Orioles. And I think this late in the year when pursuing upside just doesn't have the same appeal. I think he's a decent pickup for the two starts.
Okay. That's Miguel Gonzalez, the Cleveland, and at Kansas City. Mm-hmm. What about Willie Peralta? I mean, look, 7 2/3, six hits, four runs. He did give up three homers, and that's seven home runs allowed in his last five starts. But it was the
right.
Cubs. That home run stat, I think, is what's going to prevent me from picking up Peralta.
That's exactly it. It was the Cubs, but so is one of these two starts next week, and the other's at Cincinnati, which is a place where the ball flies out. So, yeah, I like the general trend for Peralta. I think there is a time when he could be useful, maybe even a sleeper next year, but I'm not picking him up for next week.
Some news and notes for you. Giancarlo Stanton off the DL, only pinch hitting for now. He really can't run. If somebody drops Stanton, would you pick him up?
Yeah, I think you have to, because the plan is for him to play every day at some point. You know, it may be too late for you to really benefit from him, but if you have a bench in your league, you have to pick him up just in case.
He's 83% owned, Stanton. So, you know, he's going to be available in some leagues, so maybe you take a shot on him. Robinson Cano, day-to-day with a sore foot. Now, let me go back to Stanton. Would you pick up Stanton or Kendrys Morales right now? I feel like it's a tough call. If you got to win, you know?
Well, it depends if it's for a lineup spot or a bench spot.
Even if you just want a better player on your bench, you don't know. It's a very uncertain situation with Stanton. He really can't really run right now. I don't know when they're going to get him back in the mix with full-time playing time.
Yeah, but it's a very uncertain situation with Morales, just because I don't think he can be this hot much longer.
All right, Jung Ho Kang then.
And he has playing time issues. There's questions for all of these players.
Ulysses Gurriel.
He also has playing time issues, and he has yet to really show any power in the majors. So, yeah, I'll pick up Stanton instead.
Boy, Scott, do you have any water today?
Water.
Yeah.
I probably had a little water, yes.
Was your glass half full?
Oh.
Or half
man.
Empty? Well, I should have said half empty, because you've been such a... Well, I was just... Issue.
I'm a realist here. I'm a realist.
I appreciate that. Salvador Perez has an issue. Right wrist contusion. He was hit by a pitch on the wrist. That's what happens when you get hit. You get a contusion. Justin Bour.
Yeah.
He's off the DL. But Bour sat against the lefty last night. Joe Ross set to throw a simulated game soon, but there's no guarantee that Ross is going to come back as a starter for Washington. He might go to the bullpen. Dusty Baker even said if he comes back as a starter, they might have to piggyback him. So that means, you know, he pitches five innings, four innings, whatever. Somebody else comes in. Not the most optimistic outlook for Joe Ross, right, Scott?
No, it's not. It's not. I would imagine, though, it would only take like one piggyback start to build him back up, maybe two. So it's not entirely pointless to own him, though, of course, it's not a must.
Joe Ross. Next up, Chris Davis. Strange injury. He's sitting today due to palm soreness, which has been bugging him for a little while. Matt Duffy is out for the season with an Achilles injury. Brian Dozier homered in his fifth straight game, and I got a tweet from Ryan Bolin, who pointed out that you could look back at when this hot streak started for Brian Dozier, and you kind of can point to June 19th, my birthday. It's kind of been a since my birthday thing.
Is there something about that date and the Earth's position and its revolution around the sun that causes some kind of magnetic phenomenon?
Yeah, it's just greatness. I mean,
I don't know.
If you're born on that day, it's just greatness. I don't know what else
maybe,
to say.
Maybe more children are born on that day. Maybe it does something biologically. I don't know. This is worth looking into. It's kind of like there's some mythical properties to this date. It's kind of like the island on Lost, and that these weird things happen. Mm. But it's more about a position around the sun than a position on Earth. I don't know. There needs to be more studies on this,
especially for the Twins, because if that's the Irvin Santana benchmark or starting point, and now the Dozier one too. We're on to something here. June 19th. Look it up. You know what? Why don't we look at people who were born on June 19th? I know Dirk Nowitzki was born on June 19th.
Is there a baseball player who was born on June 19th?
We're going to find out. All right, famousbirthdays.com. We'll come back to that. we'll do it right now. Oh, Macklemore? That's cool.
Sure.
A pop singer named Daniel Sky?
Okay.
Who are these people? Paul Abdul? Dirk Nowitzki, as mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Lou Gehrig. I knew. Sorry, Scott. Jacob deGrom.
Okay.
Maybe that's why I liked him.
You and Jakey. And Jacob deGrom came out of nowhere. It was almost superhuman.
Yeah.
So there's one example.
Mo Howard, as in Larry Moe and Curly, the guy who played Mo. This is a very important day.
Doug Minkiewicz,
really?
Yeah.
It's getting better and better. So how about baseball, though? I'm going to ask you some 2017 questions. One of those this guy or this guy's. Miguel Cabrera or Jose Abreu? This one's pretty easy. I'll start with an easy one. Miguel Cabrera or Jose Abreu next year, Scott? Who you got?
It is an easy one. It's Jose. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was Altuve.
Psych.
It's Miguel Cabrera.
Cabrera's really having a great year. He's only the number 8 first baseman in points leagues and number 7 in Roto. And I know I'm going to forget if I don't tell you now, so let me come back to that in a second. Anthony Rizzo in that 42-game stretch with 2 home runs was the number 16 first baseman in points leagues and number 23 in rotisserie leagues. But back to this, Cabrera or Abreu. Cabrera's going to be 34 next year. He's got 31 homers. He's slugging .554. He's a .388 on base. Just having another really awesome year. Abreu has 5 home runs in his last 7 games, but he's got a lot of catching up to do. He's at .294, .347, .480 with 23 home runs. It's going to be tough for him to slug .500. He's going to have to finish pretty hot. This was an easy call, I guess, but I guess if you had asked me at the beginning of the year who's going to get drafted first in 2017, I may have projected Abreu to have this big year, Cabrera to start showing more decline. So I'm a little surprised at how it turned out this year.
Yeah, really, this has been Miguel Cabrera's best year in a couple of years. His ISO, the last time he had an ISO this high, so just a measurement of raw power, was 2013. The only thing that's really down for him are his walks, but, you know, still a good walk rate and enough that's going right for him that I'm not really worried about him taking another step back next year. I think he's definitively a second round pick, which is down from first round, but, you know, obviously the offense around the game has improved around him while he's kind of stayed still. So that has something to do with both his ranking at first base this year and why he's going to be a second rounder next year, but still very much in the elite discussion.
Next up, how about Justin Turner or Miguel Sano next year? Who do you like, Justin Turner or Miguel Sano?
I like Justin Turner. Ooh. I don't think there's any reason to not like Justin Turner anymore. He's validated himself as a power hitter after a very slow start this year, and he makes a lot of contact too. So that certainly sets him apart from Sano, and I think makes him a safe choice. And I think we'll be surprised how early he gets drafted next year, because third base is shaping up to be maybe the weakest infield position next year.
Other than catcher.
If you count catcher, I don't really think of that as an infield position, but some people do.
Yeah, I know people might have thought like, oh,
right.
You know, I was just.
You know what third base is going to be like next year? It's going to be like how we thought of first base this year, in that if you don't fill that spot early, you're clearly going to be second rate there, because there are going to be four third basemen going in round one, but then maybe Matt Carpenter in round two, and after that, then you start talking about the Jacob Turners or Kyle Seager.
Justin
Beltre will be up there.
Yeah, so yeah, Turner Justin. And Seager are close for you?
They are, yes.
Yeah. Okay. How about this one, shortstops? Carlos Correa or Corey Seager? Seager, the number 4 shortstop in points, number 7 in Roto. Correa, number 8 in points, number 9 in Roto, and he's gone cold again. Correa's batting .256 with 1 home run and 3 doubles in his last 20 games. This was basically right after he hit a home run in 3 straight games. Also, for some reason, Correa's struggling against lefties this year, and he destroyed them in 2015, so and that's probably a fluke. But Correa or Seager, who you like?
I could change my mind again before the article is published, but in my look ahead to the first 2 rounds next year, I have Corey Seager going 11th overall and Carlos Correa going 13th overall.
Ah.
Very close. The only one in between is Clayton Kershaw, who is an interesting case in his own right, because obviously he could rise a lot or fall a lot depending how his return goes.
All right, let me ask you about that. Why would Clayton Kershaw's stock rise or fall depending on what he does at the end of this season?
It's not just the end of this season. There's a question about whether he'll have surgery in the offseason, and that would be worrisome. And then, of course, it'll be if that does happen, we'll want to look at him next spring. And if he's looking good next spring, he'll probably rise then. Just very, very concerning back issues, especially. They have sidetracked Hall of Fame caliber careers. Todd Helton's the example that always comes to mind for me. And let's see how he does. If he's able to come back and still be as good as ever, then that'll relieve my concerns enough probably to move him closer to the middle of round one. But, you know, if he struggles and has surgery, he might drop to round two.
Glass half empty, Scott White.
Maybe half full. I'm giving him a chance to move up.
All right. Are you ready to sit the following players? We talked about who you're ready to add. Are you ready to sit the following players? This one would be a tough one because of the position, but Wilson Ramos, man, woo! He was batting .180 in the 15 games before yesterday, and he went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts, so now that's 3 walks and 16 strikeouts in his last 16 games with 1 home run and 1 double. Ramos is cold. Would you consider sitting him?
I would not consider sitting him. He and the other 2 elite catchers are so far ahead of everybody else that a little bit of a slump's not going to scare me away.
How about Ben Zobrist? It's going on a while now. Ben Zobrist, before the All-Star break, was batting .283 with a .388 on base and a .467 slugging percentage. Very Zobrist-y. 13 homers, 59 runs and 4 steals in 83 games. 59 runs in 83 games. Since the All-Star break, Zobrist is now batting .256 compared to .283 before the All-Star break. Still a great on-base percentage, .374, but the slugging percentage was .467 before the break. Now it's, or since the break, .372 for Zobrist. One home run, one steal, 23 runs in 45 games. He's also been really bad at home with a .722 OPS compared to .903 on the road. Not sure that makes much sense. But, yeah, I mean, Zobrist, this, I didn't want anything to do with Zobrist this year, especially in a categories format.
Right.
And I looked really wrong for a while.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll own that. I think he was really a product of playing for the Cubs, though, with all those runs scored.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Just a slump or a reason to sit Ben Zobrist at this point?
Second base is so deep that I do think it's reason to sit him. I'm looking, I was thinking maybe he walks enough that even with, you know, the lack of home runs, the lack of steals and everything else, he was still in startable in points leagues, maybe. But I'm looking up where he ranks even in that format since the All-Star break, and he's behind Howie Kendrick. He's behind Brandon Phillips, Starlin Castro. Not very high.
Yeah.
Now, in outfield, since he is dual eligible and that's the weaker position, curious to see where he ranks there.
But it would have to be only in points leagues. Categories,
yes, it
leagues.
Is. We're talking specifically points leagues here. Categories leagues, you could probably find a middle infielder. If you need steals, Jose Peraza. If you need power, Jed Jerko, or maybe Jung Ho Kang. I don't know. So there's definitely more incentive to sit him in categories leagues.
But, now, yeah, God, were you more? Do you got more for us there?
I'm just trying to see, because in points leagues, he's, again, behind Kendrick, of course, in the outfield. But there's also other high-end players are down on the same level, like Chris Davis, Jay Bruce, Will Myers.
Chris Davis with a K or a C?
C. Hmm. Chris Davis with a C since the All-Star break.
Really? Well, yeah, he was awful until recently, but now he's playing pretty well.
He's not too far. Zobrist isn't too far behind Jackie Bradley.
Very streaky player.
Points. So outfield being thinner. Let me see. Okay, so to be more exact, he's 47th among outfielders since the All-Star break, which, yeah, you can make a case for starting him in a three outfielder points league. Obviously, top 36 would normally fill out the whole league, but considering Zobrist has more upside than some of these guys like Kevin Kiermaier's ahead of him, Kendrys Morales, Denard Span, I mean, I'd still start Zobrist over them, I think.
Interesting. I don't know if Morales has a big weekend. You know, you're at the point of the season, it'd be tough to sit Morales for Zobrist. Granted, I don't know what the matchups are, but
if he has a big weekend, you're right. Let's see if he remains the hot hand through the rest of this week.
It's pretty amazing. You look at the Cubs, right? Fowler has really fallen off. He had that great start. Remember I called Fowler the ultimate sell-high candidate? You know, that was so obvious. And it wasn't even like, I'm surprised he's doing this pedestrian, I guess. But I knew he wasn't that good, and also he's a risk to get injured all the time, and he did get injured. So Fowler hasn't been that great. Zobrist has struggled. We just talked about what Rizzo did for 42 games.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're how many games up? They're 15 and a half games up on the Cardinals. I mean, that's amazing. They're 89 and 49. Unbelievable.
Yeah. They give themselves so much depth coming into the year. Like, it felt like Zobrist and Hayward both were excessive.
Yeah.
And then they signed Fowler after that.
I didn't even mention Hayward. Yeah, he's been the dog.
Yeah, yeah. So they didn't. Kind of makes you wonder if that money would have been better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, maybe on the bullpen. D. Gordon is 0-for-5 yesterday, and now in his last 14 games, D. Gordon is 5-for-50 with no steals. And he came back pretty good after the suspension. First 23 games, .312 batting average with 9 steals and 13 attempts. But since then, 5-for-50 with no steals. You ready to sit D. Gordon?
I actually saw it. You know, I'm not paying close attention to the ad drops in the podcast league since I'm out of it. But I actually saw he got dropped in that league. And as deep as second base is, I think that's perfectly defensible. You know, it would be an interesting exercise where last year's D. Gordon would rank among this year's second base, even with 4 weeks to go. I'm going to look that up right now.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do that? I'll talk about some more players here. By the way, send us your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We do have a pretty good amount of emails to read on today's show. Again, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and you can always tweet us at CBS Scott White, at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Happy to answer your questions here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. I'm going to ask you about three. Yeah, go ahead.
I got looked it up here.
Oh, already? Wow.
Yes, already. So, last year, obviously 6 full months versus the 5.5 that players have this year. But still, last year's D. Gordon would rank only 5th in terms of head-to-head points among this year's second base group. So that just shows you it's not entirely him. Obviously, he's struggled, but his ceiling isn't as high among this year's crop to begin with.
Well, all right. So how did you calculate that?
I just went and saw he had 468.5 points last year.
Yeah.
And Robinson Cano's fourth with this year with 476. So.
Oh, but he played a full season last year.
Oh, okay. So maybe I've confused you, Adam.
Yeah.
D. Gordon. I took last year's D. Gordon.
Uh-huh.
And plugged him into this year's second base ranking.
So he's going to finish even worse than that.
Yes. I'm saying even though this year's crop of second basemen doesn't have a full year of stats yet.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Last year's D. Gordon with a full year of stats only checks in 5th.
So he's going to be like 10th in points around there probably. Last year's D. Gordon.
It's possible. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's woo. Woo. All right. Glass half empty. Scott White comes through again. Ready to drop. The following players: Odubel Herrera is 84% owned. Drop him.
Yeah,
is enough. James Paxton is 67% owned. This is 3 bad starts in a row. Fairly predictable the last 2, both against Texas. Although I guess I didn't think it would be so bad the first time he faced Texas, but looking back, I guess it's not a huge surprise. And Paxton, I believe, has Oakland this weekend. You know, where are you on Paxton?
His ability is so enticing. Even in this awful start, he had 8 strikeouts, but I don't think he's going to have a chance to earn our trust. And he still has that fingernail issue, which apparently the remedy for it wasn't bothering him in this start, but it could still pop up again. I think he's somebody we're scouting for next year now.
You know what? Why don't you do me a favor? Look up his BABIP or BABIP, whatever you want to say, because I was watching the game last night. And the announcers mentioned that they said for Paxton, there have been a few starts this year that have been death by a million paper cuts or 1,000 paper cuts, whatever the heck the expression is. And it's kind of got a Sabathia feel to it. And again, in this start, he had some bad luck. There was an error behind him. There was like a bloop or a bleeder that scored a run. Then he gave up a home run to Luke Roy. I didn't see that. But I wonder if he's just been a bit unlucky because Paxton's only given up 8 home runs this year.
His BABIP is 358.
It's pretty high.
Yeah, compared to 289 last year, 270 the year before, 203 the year before. Yeah. All right. There may be a luck factor going on here too.
I don't think I would drop Paxton for Buchholz or Peralta. Right, we're not there yet.
No, but I'd drop him for a 2-star Boyd. I'd drop him for a 2-star Anderson.
Okay. And finally, Brandon Moss. Are you ready to drop Brandon Moss? We pumped him up quite a bit. Now he's 1 for his last 29 with 4 walks and 11 strikeouts. That was after a very good August in which Moss hit 8 home runs. Moss is 66% owned. How droppable is he?
Roto leagues, I'd say not at all. But points leagues, which was never supposed to be his format anyway, but hot hand play. I think that opportunity has passed us by.
It's getting very frustrating that a lot of these second half hot hands have just not been able to keep it up.
Well,
Brad Miller, Brandon Moss, I guess you could say Jerko has kept it up. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. Corey Dickerson.
Yeah, but that's kind of inherent to the hot hands moniker. You know, You know, there's a short shelf life. You want to capitalize on it while you can. You're not really sure when it's going to end. So there's always a little bit of risk there that you get it right at the end. But it also could be very rewarding if you jump in soon enough. Like with Morales. Morales was one of my top 10 sleeper hitters for this week now, and I think that's already paid off.
Oh, yeah. Now, the one I really wanted to see play out was Billy Hamilton, because he got really hot, his plate discipline was better, and then he went through a very bad stretch, but he kind of bounced back. I think he had a 3-steal game, was playing a little bit better before the oblique injury, and now I don't know when we're going to see Billy Hamilton again. It's going to make him a little bit difficult to evaluate going into next year. We need to see some more from Mr. Hamilton.
I feel like he's legitimately up to stock this year, if only because obviously speed is the only reason he's a major leaguer, and his fly ball rate was significantly down this year. So, I mean, that's in and of itself. He's never been a guy who strikes out too much, you know, needs to hit the ball on the ground and then beat out the throw. And he started doing that more.
None up, none down. So that goes to, that brings us to something that was supposed to be 3-man rotation, but I guess I was in a rush, so it came out, I typed it out as the mean rotation.
The mean rotation. That sounds like a team name.
Instead of 3-man rotation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you saw this, but one of our fantasy football listeners rearranged the letters in Heath Cummings' name to create, Thug Mechanism.
Thug Mechanism.
Is that perfect or what?
There is a Thug Mechanism going on there.
Yeah, it's the best anagram.
He inspires thuggery.
I wonder if we can do that with Scott White. I feel like that's a very anagram friendly name here.
You know how Dane Perry released, You know what? I can't even remember.
Yeah, the all anagram team?
Yeah, it's not going to be a good story, but he came up with one for me because I was telling him how much I liked that series of articles where he came up with anagrams for every team starting lineup.
I got a good one for you.
Oh, I know what it was. Hot Wet Ticks. But without a K on ticks. So it wasn't his best, which tells me my name doesn't have enough letters to make a good anagram.
I got a good one, I think. I just came up with this. The Twits Company, spelled C-O, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, you're the Twits Company. You a bunch of twits.
I'm CEO.
Yeah, you're the CEO of the Twits Company. I like that.
Yes.
Here's the mean rotation. Who saw this coming? Jeff Samardzija. This is actually his second really good start this year at Colorado. 7 innings, 2 runs, 9 strikeouts. Two starts next week, San Diego and St. Louis, they're both at home. I feel like you start them.
Yeah, he's been better recently than we give him credit for.
Yeah, but it's all been at home or against bad opponents or both. And when he went to the Cubs, he got lit up, so nobody thought he was going to do well at Colorado.
2.45 ERA over his last 6 starts with nearly a strikeout per. You're right, nobody thought he did well at Colorado, nobody should have, but he has a career 2.15 ERA there. Somehow.
Yeah.
Not many, small sample size, but.
That's just still very strange. All right. So 2 starts next week. They're both at home and one's the Padres. Looks good for Samardzija. Jason Hamill. So 3 terrible starts in his last 4. One of those was at Colorado. Hamill's got a weird home road split going. 1.77 ERA at home, 5.26 ERA on the road. 16 of the 21 home runs that Hamill's allowed have come on the road. I think this is more recent. Like, for example, I don't really know if that's a real split or if it's just he's been bad lately and he's been on the road more lately. Because he had some very good road starts earlier in the year. But Hamill's got 1 start at St. Louis next week. I imagine you'd be pretty hesitant.
Yeah, I would be.
Okay, great. And the dud of the day, Gio Gonzalez. Should we stop thinking of the Braves as an easy matchup? They lit up Gio for 6 runs in 3 innings yesterday.
Yeah, they did. And I would think the way their offense has performed in the second half. You know, Freddie Freeman, I think, has been the second best hitter in the second half after Brian Dozier. And Ender Inciarte's hit about 370 in the second half. And Matt Kemp's aboard. It's really, You know, I don't know how much of it is just everything clicking at the right time, but doesn't change the fact that everything's clicking at the right time, and it's they're not an I wouldn't be scared of Atlanta as a matchup for a pitcher, but I don't know that we should target them like we were before.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the Twins, who had a fairly long stretch of clobbering the ball, and they were a tough matchup. And they've cooled off. Looking at their last 10 games or so, they've scored 0, 4, 4, 5, 4, 3. Oh no, 11. They won that game. Actually, I'm wrong. I'm looking at the wrong column. They scored 0, 4, 4, 8, 4, 11, 11, 5, and 3. They're actually kind of bouncing back a little bit. So maybe there's something to it. But they were much better than what we thought for a while. I'm rambling. In the bullpen. Well, actually, we have these three fringy starting pitchers. Irvin Santana, 79% owned, 2 starts next week. He had a quality start, the bare minimum, 6 innings, 3 runs against Kansas City yesterday. Previous 2 starts were bad for Santana. Do you trust him at Detroit and at the Mets?
I'd probably start him. Yeah, I probably would. Trust is a little strong, but I think there's been so little bad to really cause for me to change course after how good he was for so long.
Irvin Santana. Let's go to Brandon Finnegan. Brandon Finnegan struggled against the Mets yesterday. 5 innings, 2 runs on 2 solo homers, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Now, his previous 3 starts were absolutely dominant. Only 4 walks in 20 innings, 29 strikeouts, 1 homer. So this was surprising. And he's got Pittsburgh on the road.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have his best command, but I still buy the turnaround for Finnegan, adding the changeup, how much of a difference it's made. He has 2 starts left, I think, what I read. Yes. Okay. So, I'd be fine using him as a SPARP in a 1-star week. Not sure who he's facing next week.
He's at Pittsburgh.
2-star week.
At Pittsburgh. Yeah.
I think he's fine to use then, but understand short shelf life here.
Okay. And Luke Weaver. Would you rather own Luke Weaver, like a 1-start Luke Weaver or a 2-start Matt Boyd?
I'll go 2-start Matt Boyd, though I think Weaver is better.
In the bullpen, Tony Watson gave up 4 runs on 3 homers. That is hard to do. And he blew his 5th save in 15 chances. I think his 3rd blown save for Tony Watson since taking over the closer's role. And his 2nd blown save in 3 appearances. Do you see changes coming in Pittsburgh? I don't.
You know, I don't, because Neftali Feliz is not healthy right now. He would have been the obvious. It could have been him or Watson that the Pirates went to after trading Melanson, and now that's not an option. So I don't think there's going to be a change.
And AJ Ramos pitched the 8th. Fernando Rodney pitched the 9th in non-save situations. So it looks like status quo there. Oh, you know what? I played a FanDuel lineup yesterday.
Oh, really? How long had it been?
It had been months, obviously, because I wasn't able to do it here in New York. But I am now. I actually have no idea if I won. I forgot to check. I'm going to check. I feel like I lost. Let's see. Scores. Oh, no, I won! I played a 50-50 on a $2 entry. I won $1.60.
Yes!
So how about that? Finished 41st out of 100 with my lineup of Clay Buchholz. 47 points. Booyah.
Ooh, you went with Clay Buchholz at a 50-50. That took some guts, sir.
Yeah, I wouldn't have won in a tournament.
No.
Jonathan Lucroy.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Abreu. D. Gordon. Oops. How about these 4 combining for 3 points? D. Gordon, Nolan Arenado, Addison Russell. I'm not even sure if he played last night. And Carlos Gonzalez. I tried to get some Coors Field in there. And then I had Mike Trout and Mookie Betts. So it was basically my pitcher, catcher, and first baseman got me almost all of my points.
Blind squirrel finds a nut.
Yeah. All right. I'm in the green here. Good stuff. Yeah, it was fun. Honestly, it was fun to play. I don't have much fantasy baseball going on right now. And sometimes with FanDuel, I don't really do any research. At this point, I kind of know what I'm doing with the season, and I just... I kind of had fun with it. For $2, why not? So emails. Colin says, would you drop Brian McCann for Nick Hundley or Travis d'Arnaud?
Nick Hundley has been hot lately, but he still sits like every third game, if not every other game. So I don't think so.
This is from Brian Manuel in Philly. Dear Jax, Clay, and Chibs. Brian, I assure you, once baseball season ends, I'm going to finish Sons of Anarchy. I'm almost done. Season and a half left. Should I drop Mike Napoli and pick up CJ Krohn?
In a points league, I think so. In Roto, I'm not going to say no, but I mean, Napoli could really go off and hit like 8 home runs over the next 2 weeks, and I don't think anybody'd be surprised.
Boy, did we get a lot of corrections yesterday. From this one's from Scott the Purist, who's one of the 70 million people who told us that Gary Carlton and Mike are Hall of Fame catchers Gary Carter, Carlton Fisk, and Mike Piazza.
Now I'm going to defend myself on this, because for most of the year, Adam, you've included the emails you're going to read in the podcast notes, so I have the email in front of me. But last couple weeks, you're pulling double duty with baseball and football, and you've kind of just read emails on the fly. So I'm just relying on you speaking the email to me.
And this made a big difference?
Can't reflect on. Well, yeah, because I couldn't even remember what the names were.
Ah, okay.
Well, you by remember the time we were talking about.
You were talking about the pitcher that Al loved, and according to Scott the Purist, it was Gary Maddux.
Well, was he a pitcher? But yes, that name does sound familiar.
Oh, I don't know if he was a pitcher. Maybe it was a catcher.
I don't think he was a pitcher.
Well, it was Gary Maddux, whoever the heck he was.
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Elo. Dear Jackie, Smokey, David, and Alan.
All right, Gary Maddux was an outfielder, but go ahead.
Jackie, Smokey, David, and Alan. You want me to type it to you? You want me to IM you?
Jackie, Smokey, Davey.
David and Alan.
Jackie, I don't know.
These are Robinsons.
Okay. Smokey Robinson, yes, okay.
All right, he wants to know about SPARPs, basically. How do you feel about using RP with starts during the week over regular closers? Two start, Anibal Sanchez and Zach Britton. Should I pick up another RP for an extra start and sit Britton so he could pick up Junior Guerra, AJ Cole? They have one start. Jose Urena, Ross Detweiler, they may have two starts. Gosh, he'd have to sit Zach Britton.
What would be the goal? And is this,
just get
I
more
guess,
starts,
points?
His opponent is points has league? Three more projected starts than him.
I don't think so. If Junior Guerra was making two starts, maybe. But I don't think it's... I mean, Britton's probably going to outdo him just as a closer.
Mike wants to know if Jacob deGrom is droppable on a playoff contender.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you really need that extra roster spot, I do think it's possible we just don't see deGrom again. But you'd hate to drop him and then he's the one who come back and beats you in the championship game. That would just you'd die inside if that happened.
John from Illinois says, I have no questions for you today, but I'm on a bye in both my leagues as I watch Brian Dozier, who I picked up in both my leagues in May, waste so much fantasy production. That is really frustrating.
Yeah, I don't really like the idea of buys. I mean, somebody who has a bye can't really complain because they're getting an automatic win. So I understand why it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's not like the outcome would be any better for you.
You know what you could do? I don't think I would do this, but you could do this. You could say, all right, Scott and Adam are facing off this week in the playoffs. Heath has a bye. The winner gets Heath next round. But the winner in the round against Heath gets that score versus whichever Heath score is better from the bye week or the actual week that he's playing. Does that make sense?
That sounds like too much of an advantage.
It is a big advantage.
I mean,
big
the bye is an advantage enough, I think.
Okay.
The bye is really too much of an advantage, which is what I was getting at. I don't like the idea of, part of a player's season line not counting to your outcome at all, good or bad. You know, it happens to be good in this case with Dozier, but if, maybe this would have been your worst week of the season and You don't suffer it, and that I just don't like the idea of that.
I think you've earned it. You've earned, like, it would be so lame if you finish as the number one overall seed, have the worst week of your season, and lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it would be, but A, I like 2-week playoffs instead of one to kind of dilute that short sample effect, and B, I mean, what's the point of having playoffs at all if the first team can't lose?
I kind of like my idea. I'd like to get some traction.
I don't like it. It's too big of an advantage.
It's a huge advantage. Remember this stupid league I played in last year where the higher seed in the playoffs got to start an extra utility?
That's too much of an advantage also.
And I don't even think we realized it until basically playoff time. That was one of the worst rules that I've ever seen.
This one would be even more of an advantage though, Adam.
Than an extra player?
Yes, it would be.
It would just mean that you have to beat, that you and I would have to beat Heath 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Well, now it'd be even harder than that because you have to beat Heath's best score.
You'd have to beat the top-seeded team
2 weeks in a row.
You know, you couldn't, if he had an off week, it wouldn't matter. You know, you'd have to really, like, overpower him at probably his best because one of his 2 weeks will probably be up there.
All right, fine. What if we take the average of Heath's bye week plus actual week? Add 25 fantasy. No, that's
what.
All right, no, just kidding.
This is totally convoluted now.
Yeah, no, I was joking. This is interesting. Joe from Hudson Valley says, "Dear Lenny and Carl."
Oh, those are Simpsons characters.
Yeah, which one would you like to be?
I'll be Carl.
He's Carl. I'm Carl. I called it. What can I do about Stanton in my daily lineup? 12-team points league. I stashed him on the DL. I don't want to activate him because I have to drop someone, but I don't want to keep him. I don't want to drop him because somebody can pick him up in my league and use him against me. This is exactly what I'm talking about. This is a tough call. Fortunately, Joe didn't really list anybody else on his team, so yeah. I don't know.
I'm sure he has somebody else he can drop.
Yeah, I hope so. You don't want to lose Stanton, but if I had to go with my gut, I'm going to say Stanton is not going to do much for fantasy owners rest of season.
I think that's probably what my gut would say too, but I think he's more likely to do something than Puig and Moncada, who you were trying your hardest to talk up yesterday.
I was, yeah, it's true. Stephen Kent, last email here. I need one of these two starting pitchers for this week. Would you start Bundy at Tampa Bay? Oh, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, he's pitching like now, so it's not going to be very helpful. I think he's pitching now.
All right, Bundy, so different last email?
Yeah, Bundy's pitching right now. So, yeah, would you have started Bundy at Tampa Bay or Gausman at Detroit?
I actually would have started Gausman at Detroit, so we'll see. Even though that's the worst matchup, of course, I think my level of trust in Gausman is that much higher right now. We'll see how that works out.
Okay.
Nobody will get to react to it, but we'll know. We'll all know.
Well, that's it for the Wednesday show. We got 15 games on the schedule today, so plenty to talk about tomorrow and more help with two-star pitchers for Fantasy Week 24. That's Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. You all have yourself a great day. Talk to you on Thursday.